Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
I'm at the best age that I could be. I don't have no wants to go back to be any younger, to be any particular age, any nothing. I'm happy at 53. I love my life for what it is today. I love my blessings. I love my children, my grandchildren. And for what I've gone through in my life, I have been blessed beyond my imagination or anything I could want.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the My Body, My Story project. Today with us in the studio, Pamela. And while she's sitting in the makeup chair and Chitra is creating her magic, I'll be asking her a few questions. Hi, Pam. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Let's start and tell us 10 facts about yourself.
53. I'm Greek. I'm a mother of three children, two boys and a girl. Mm-hmm. I'm a grandmother of five.
What?
eldest is 10. The youngest is 40 days.
Oh, so cute.
I've been in the same job for 23 years, which I absolutely love. I love to be of service. I would say my hobbies are flipping furniture and I'm an avid traveller. I'm going to Greece in 14 days, so I'm really looking forward to that. And yeah, after what's been happening the last 3 years, it's just time to get away and, you know, just enjoy, relax.
Is it your first time you're getting away?
No. In the last three years? Yes, in the last 3 years, yes.
It's going to be a great trip.
Yes, it will.
What's your favourite place in Greece?
In Greece, so I'm from Rhodes. Mm-hmm. I was born in Rhodes, so I have to say that's my favourite, but it's not really. My favourite place in Greece would be, outside Athens, would be Crete. It's just absolutely stunning.
Mm. So when did you move to Australia?
I came to Australia in December 1974. My parents migrated here in 1970 and I followed in 1974 in December.
So you've been a small child.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was, yeah.
So and you always lived in Sydney?
I sure have, yes.
Yeah. So do you feel Australia home now?
I do call Australia home. I think we are very privileged here to live in Australia. Mm-hmm. But there is a connection when I do go back to Greece, that there's just that bond. You feel that bond, and although it's beautiful to go and see and experience and, you know, go on adventures, it's also great to come home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apart from the Greece, what other places you love?
I absolutely love Valencia in Spain. Mm-hmm. I love Italy, but I love the regional part of Italy. I've been to Russia, Estonia, Switzerland, all of those sort of areas, Morocco, Monaco. So I've done a fair bit of travelling, which I've been very blessed to be able to do so.
Yeah.
But I would say it's the more community-based. Like, you can go to a country and what makes it is the people.
Agree.
If the people are lovely, then you're happy to go back. But if the people are cold, I wouldn't return.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. It's the people make difference.
100%.
So should I ask what's your favorite cuisine? Is it Greek or something?
No, it's not actually. It's actually tapas. Oh. I love, absolutely love Spanish tapas. Because I cook Greek and it's everyday, you know.
Food.
It's just, tapas is my absolute favorite food.
That's interesting. Great. Also, I know two other things which I want to talk about, that you are now a certified trauma coach.
Yep. So I'm a certified trauma coach. I haven't stepped out in the coaching world as such. Like, I'm just building up the business as we speak. I've got my qualifications or whatever have you, and I'm just building social media and getting the awareness out there.
Do you know already what's the social media account it is, or it's?
Yeah. My handle is Create Your New Identity.
Mm-hmm. Creative New Identity.
Yeah. So to me, it's about creating your new identity, not the past identity that you suffered through trauma. But your new identity of who you want to be.
Is it on Instagram?
Of course. Yes, I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Facebook.
So I'll give you.
I'm active. I'm very active. Yeah.
You're on TikTok. That's great.
Yeah. TikTok's a new platform for me. It's a little bit overwhelming at the moment. Yeah. It's just coming into my, you got to step into it slowly, I think, TikTok. It's very out there.
Yeah. So what made you do this degree, to get this certificate?
Well, I believe I have a story to share. My story starts from birth. Mm-hmm. So when I was born, my parents left me with my grandma at 40 days and came to Australia. So they came to Australia with their sons. So I was left in Greece alone. No, not alone. I was with my grandma. Mm-hmm. But still, she raised me, which for up to about maybe 45 years, I carried that as an abandonment. I carried abandonment issues around that. Mm-hmm. But once I started to do the healing work, I realised that she left me with the person she loved the most. Mm-hmm. And I was so blessed to be able to get the 5.5 years of attention, love, support, you know, affection. Just the continuous one-on-one time instead of having to be here in Australia with my mum juggling work and, the two boys and working 2-3 jobs. So really it was a blessing for me. Mm-hmm. But it was hard to understand whilst I was growing up because, you know, you just think, oh, my God, I so crave my mum's love, but I never got it as a child. So, yeah, it's always been a craving, you know. And so until you get that awareness and that understanding is when the healing starts, I think.
Yeah, so you are youngest out of all the kids?
I am the youngest. So they had already purchased their tickets. So it was 1969, obviously, and they had purchased their tickets to migrate to Australia. Mm-hmm. And they were coming to work. And then they found out that they were pregnant with me. And my dad didn't want to proceed with the pregnancy, but, you know, my mum was adamant that she was not going to abort any child. Mm. And they waited till she gave birth to me and then, they left for Australia.
Mm-hmm. An interesting story. Mm. So what trauma you want to work with, or any trauma or just in particular?
No, so mine's childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. So when I say childhood trauma, I mean the lack of connection with my parents, you know, and being used as the, which is probably not the right term, but I would say the punching bag. So mm-hmm. because of there was no connection and there was no, the foundational piece where, you know, you build your relationship on familiarity and solidarity and, you know, the connection with your child and its tears and its love and its mm-hmm. affection and its hugs. There was none of that. So I felt like a stranger when I came to Australia. And then, you know, and who were they going to pick on? My mum, unfortunately, was very narcissistic, and I think she's got a lot of unsolved trauma herself. So, and I would say it's a lot of it's ancestral as well. My father was very abusive towards her, so because there was no connection between her and I, that's where she unleashed on me. So in saying that, I became the more or less the person she let out, vented yeah. her anger out on,
a
her
buffer.
Frustration, mm. her disappointments, her everything, where, you know, my dad used to abuse her and she would abuse me. So it was like a continuous flow of things. The other thing was that I was treated very differently to the boys. So when my mum remarried as well, she wanted to be the super stepmom. So, you know, she wanted to praise these kids and show to everyone in the community of what a great stepmother I am, that she would dress these girls and, you know, show them off to the world, and whereas I would be left at home. I started working, sewing at a very young age for a family business that we had, and, you know, they would go out and just leave me sewing in the, you know, in the garage. So there was a lot of things behind this. It's just not something that you can describe in 1 hour or whatever have you. It's a series of events.
It's a complex thing.
Yeah.
It looks like a Cinderella story.
Yeah, it is. It's a very Cinderella story. And the fact that I was an obese child, and like every Monday was weigh day for me. I was just a fat kid. And I can honestly say that although what we call today fat is not what I was. I was 85 kilos up until I was 22 years old. 85 kilos today is pretty standard. But back in those days, back in the 80s, it was like a fat girl, you know. So I was shamed, like, you know, you're fat, you stink, you do this. You know, you're not going to find a husband, you're going to be left on the shelf. You know, and I was, every Monday was weigh day, and if I didn't lose weight, it was beating time. So I would get physically abused for not losing weight, or being a shame, a disgrace, you know, for continuing to be fat. But what I realised through my healing process was the only way I got my mum's attention was to not lose weight. So by me not losing weight was the 10 minutes she gave me attention. So
even in an abusive way.
Even in abusive ways. So I craved her attention so bad that it didn't matter how I got it, I still got it, if that makes any sense. She still gave me that 10 minutes of attention, whether it was, well, it wasn't a very nice way, but yeah. Yeah, so I went on up until I got 20. I eloped with my husband. Well, I didn't really elope. They told me I couldn't marry him, so then I ran off and got married. So technically I did elope. And his father said that I was too fat for his son. So
it just
kept getting worse and worse. So this is at 85 kilos.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even really obese. So anyway, we came home and told them that we went and got married, and his parents literally kicked us out. My mother said, well, she couldn't kick me out because then I'd be a disgrace to the community and, you know,
yeah.
a disgrace to the Greek, you know, what would the people say? So we moved in, and one lived upstairs, one lived downstairs, and in 3 months we were married in a Greek church, because I had to be married in the eyes of God before I could be sleeping with a man. Then got pregnant straight away and I ballooned up to 185 kilos. By the time I had my third child, I was 135 kilos. 185 kilos, I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. And but I was a fit fat person, if I could say that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very active. I had the three children, you know. I was go, go, go. I worked. And then in 1998, I decided to have what was then called the biliopancreatic diversion, which was a surgery that they had just brought from Italy. Mm-hmm. And there was no background data on it because it was a brand new surgery, but people did lose weight remarkably fast. Mm-hmm. So the way they do that is they cut your stomach in half and then they cut your intestine, your large intestine, from 7 metres to 2 metres, and they discard the 5 and they connect it to your colon. Mm-hmm. So everything basically you ate just came through, and that was that's a fatty's dream, because you can eat it whatever you want, it goes in and out. Mm-hmm. But what happened is you become very malnutritioned.
Yeah.
And with the malnutrition comes hair loss and anemia and so forth and so on. And I did reach 100 kilos on that, so I had lost quite a bit of weight. And then it just stabilised, which I was quite happy with. You know, 100 kilos for me was quite good. Mm-hmm. And then by 2000 and maybe 9... I started to put weight back on, and I was getting fat. I mean, fatter, and I just said, "Nah, there's no way I can do this. I can't put the weight back on. I don't want to. You know, I don't want to go back to being obese." Mm-hmm. So I went and had the lap band, and with the lap band, that sort of saved my life, because the food wouldn't go through the band so fast. I couldn't eat so much, mm-hmm. and then the nutrients got absorbed. And I reached maybe 85 kilos before I had my first stretch of plastic surgery to remove skin. Mm-hmm. They removed 12 kilos of skin off me, and they put everything where it's supposed to be. So my boobs were where they're supposed to be. I did inner thighs, I did boobs, tummy tuck, I did back. I did, you know, the arms.
Mm-hmm. So everything, it's all in one?
All in one. Yeah, they don't do that anymore either. That was a 12 and a half hour operation.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So it was full blown. It was full on. And then my breasts went, after that I lost more weight, and my breasts went flat as, like they look like two big eggs. And I went in and they reconstructed it with tissue and whatever have you. And they gave me boobs to support my back size, because mm-hmm. obviously I've got a very wide back. I fluctuate between 60 and 62 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
Quite happy with that.
You keep it for how many years?
So that was in 1998. So it's been 1998 to today, so whatever that is.
25 years.
Yeah, so I have maintained. I do have little, I did have, I don't anymore, but I did have little bouts of up and down weight gain. But it's not an easy way out. It's just a tool. And every day you have to monitor what I'm eating, how I'm eating, how's it going to affect me.
Do you still have band, or you removed
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no. I've still got the band.
Because now they say it's a dangerous, like people remove it and...
Yeah, well, touch wood. I haven't had any issues with that.
So you're the one example that it went well for you.
Yes, it did. And I've been at a comfortable sweet spot for many years. Like, I haven't adjusted my band. Once it got to that sweet spot, I've been to Europe since 2010 with the same sort of restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you go to Europe, you just want to devour everything. But you know what? It's mind over matter. And We've got to eat to live, not live to eat. Mm-hmm. That's the mentality that's got to change around food.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a psychological battle, this food thing. You know, the body dysphoria around food and around what you look like is just unbelievable. Like for a long time, I was going into the large sizes in the shops to find clothes. Mm-hmm. When I knew really I was a size, you know, let's stop at 14. So let's say size 14, I was still going into the Target larger women's size.
Mm-hmm.
I now sit comfortably in a size 10 to 12,
mm-hmm.
Which is a dream. Like never in my wildest dreams in all my life would I ever think that I would be wearing a size 10.
Yeah.
Comfortably. That's me in a nutshell.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah.
So, but you still have that, the first operation, maybe that's the combination of two, mm-hmm. helps you to...
100%. Yeah. 100%, I don't doubt that.
What I didn't understand, that the first one, is it like a bypass or it's something different?
So that they stopped doing this operation. Oh, it was okay. Very invasive. They used to cut you down your chest, yeah. Down the center of your chest,
mm.
and reorganize everything inside and then close you back up.
Yeah.
So they don't do that anymore. Obviously, bypass now is keyhole, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that invasive... surgery is it's ceased. It doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I did do it with a boy that I met. He was 18 years old and we became really good pals and we're still very good friends today, and he's done really well. He too has maintained his weight. He's had his up and down days, but yeah, it's I would say even if I took the band out, I still got the backup of the other one.
Yeah.
But the other one is, it really does not let you absorb any nutrients. My diet is predominantly green. Like I do eat everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say no to anything. I don't say no to chips, no to chocolate. I eat everything. A small amount. Plus you can't stomach large amounts. And the other thing too about the surgery is when you have the surgery, if you have too much sugar, your body goes into a dump, which is called dumping.
Dumping syndrome.
And that really is, it's horrible, absolutely horrible.
You need to be living in the toilet.
yeah. And even with the first surgery, that's where you were. And the other thing with the first surgery is, the one that they don't do anymore is, because you weren't processing the food, everything was going in and out, and the stench in the bathroom, you just couldn't use the public bathroom. It was horrible.
Yeah.
So you had to use matches or zinc or some sort of thing to disguise the smell. It was just, it was horrible.
Mm.
But you know what? You had to weigh up your options. Do I lose the weight and, you know, or do I worry about the smell, you know, and yeah.
I'm just thinking that cases like that, when we have from time to time this upset stomach, whatever, and the smell, and thinking, oh my God, if we smell that bad inside,
yeah.
Imagine like we as a factory of bad smell.
Yeah. Well, with the surgery, the first one, it was unprocessed. So it was just going in and out.
But now it's different.
Yeah, very different.
So I didn't understand. Did they stitch all together, back together?
So when I had the band, they had to reopen me up because I had already been open and my organs had gelled together, because once you open your body, the cavity, once it gets air in it, things just gel together.
Mm.
So they had to open me up to separate the stomach from the organs so they can put the band around the stomach. But the beauty of that is, when they did open me up, all that scarring, all that, because it was a zigzag scar, like a Zorro sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
all that scarring, when I lost the weight, it dropped that skin. So when they pulled it down to do the plastic surgery,
mm-hmm.
and they pulled it down to my tummy, it stretched out all the new skin, so all that got discarded when they cut it all off.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh. Gosh. That's a really big journey, you know, to go through. And yeah, I can imagine it, how much, how desperate you should feel to go through this kind of operation.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so... coming back, I'll ask you about the body image and all these things a bit later, but I just want to ask one more question about, so now you're doing this as a part-time or job, or like not full-time, but still getting into this coaching, the trauma coaching. And I will ask you a provocative question. As I'm my first master's in psychology as well, and I did study clinical psychology, but at some point I decided that no, I'm not gonna be a psychotherapist, because I believe that you cannot heal the trauma. My belief, and based on my study and experience, and my sister is a psychotherapist, and I can see, you know, the results of her work, that you can probably learn how to deal with your trauma to make your life easier, but you cannot heal it completely. And some of my colleagues, psychologists, disagree with that. So I'd like to know your opinion, being a traumatized yourself and working on that and being a trauma coach, like, what do you think about that?
In regards to that, I think that if we sit here and wonder why, we're never going to get a response. Okay, these events have passed, they've happened, there's no way of going back and altering the past. But I do believe that if you take away the lessons, so I'm a timeline therapist as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that if you go back into your past and think, what lessons did it give me? What did it teach me? What can I take away that I can bring into my life that say, okay, this happened to me. How do I deal with it? How can I overcome it? And how can I move on from this trauma without letting it affect me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe, obviously we can't change the past, it's happened. But we can take away, what did I gain from it? I'll give you an example. So when my mum used to beat into me, I built up the resilience and I wouldn't cry.
Mm-hmm.
I just used to think, I ain't gonna give you the satisfaction of crying. And when she was beating me, she would say, oh, it doesn't hurt, and beat me harder.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, I had built up this resilience, or I thought this strength. I don't know where it came from. I'm a big believer in God as well. So to me, it was God giving me the courage and the strength and the power to overcome the feeling of the pain, mm-hmm. right? So what did it teach me? It taught me resilience. It taught me that no matter what happens, I can endure this and I can move forward. The thing with trauma is that it's always there, but are you going to let it poison you for the rest of your life? Are you going to carry it into your life where it's like drinking poison and expecting, you know, the saying that says drinking poison expecting someone else to die. You know, these people have moved on, they don't care. It's you that's carrying the wound. Heal the wound and allow yourself to move on. You know, accept it for what it is and just take away the lessons and the learnings and proceed to make a better life for yourself.
That's a good answer. So let's move to the second part of the interview about aging and body image. And my first question here is, what does aging mean to you?
I'm at the best age that I could be. I don't have no wants to go back to be any younger, to be any particular age, any, nothing. I'm happy at 53. I love my life for what it is today. I love my blessings. I love my children, my grandchildren. And for what I've gone through in my life, I have been blessed beyond my imagination or anything I could want even more. Like, it's just three amazing children, the grandchildren, you know. I've been blessed. I'm so grateful for my life. So grateful for the bad things, the good things, everything. Just grateful for everything.
So it's, yeah, you're like a Benjamin Barton, like you reverse the age. You felt more older when you were younger
yes,
than now.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. Very true. I just love where I'm at. Love where I'm at.
I know you said that already, but still I will ask this question. But yep. If you still could go back to any age,
yep.
To what age you would go, and what advice would you give yourself at that age?
I would say I would go back to, say, 1985. I tried to commit suicide. Mm. And because just the beatings were just something I couldn't handle, and the life that I had, right? If I could go back to that young girl and just say, it will be all right, you will get through this and you'll be in your best place when you are older, mm-hmm. You know, that would be an age where I would go back to. I mean, I regret trying to commit suicide because it goes against my religious beliefs, mm-hmm. But it was a way of escape. Mm-hmm. It was a way, I was a young kid and I couldn't handle it and I didn't know. And now when I hear about children that try or do it, I just think, oh my God, you know, I was there. I wish I could offer them the advice. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so now if we spoke a lot about body today, and if your body could talk, what do you think it would ask you, tell you now at this time?
Stop abusing it. Like I abused my body a lot. I vomited a lot because the weigh-in day was coming every Monday. So if I did eat something, I would go and vomit. I would purge. I was bulimic. Mm-hmm. So I would eat and then I'd go vomit. I would stick my fingers down my throat and just vomit. Just so I don't gain weight, so I don't get bashed on the Monday. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. I also did a lot of Duramine, which was actually my mum put me on Duramine when I was about 12, which is a speed. Back in the day, it was speed that was prescribed by doctors.
What is that?
Duramine was a drug that had speed in it. Mm-hmm. So speed is an amphetamine. Mm-hmm. And what it used to do, it doesn't do it anymore. They don't prescribe it this toxic level anymore. But what it used to do, used to make you not want to eat. Mm-hmm. And your jaw used to just grind, like your teeth used to grind.
Yeah.
But when you stopped the Duramine, if you lost 10 kilos, you used to find 20. You know, I wouldn't, although I did, the young ages, I didn't have any control because my mum put me on them. At the older age, I continued with the Duramine and whatever have you. Like I've done Herbalife, Gloria Marshall, Herbalife, Gloria Marshall, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Every single weight loss program, I've done it. Mm. I've done it. I take it. I test anything. If someone tells me something works, I'm there. Let's do it, you know. That sort of stuff. I'd be more conscious of what I know now. If I knew today about nutrition, mm-hmm. And the choices you can make. But I don't even think it's about food. I think we hold on to emotions so much that it also holds on to weight. The minute you shift the thought, the emotions from your body of you know, abandonment, whatever, anything that you feel like, you know, any type of emotion that is not good for you is when the weight starts to drop. The minute you stop caring, the minute you stop, everything just starts to fall off. The minute you stop worrying about your weight is when it all dissolves. This is my personal experience. The minute I stopped caring is the minute everything started to fall off. Like it just, it was just like an instant sort of thing. I didn't weigh anything. I didn't, you know, I just ate what I wanted. And of course with reasonable, you know, amounts and not rubbish like KFCs and whatever have you. Yeah, once you drop the emotional part, that's when it all starts to fall off.
But then coming back to the surgery as a tool, like, do you still think people should do that if they haven't solved this emotional part first? Or does this surgery helps them to start, because they start losing weight, they start looking better, and this is a chance for them to... So what do you think about that, that the how it comes together, the emotional part and the surgery?
I don't believe that everyone's ready. I think a lot of people jump in to this surgery thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be saved. And that's how I initially jumped in, because you're so obese, you just want some sort of relief from being overweight. There's a lot of people that are ready for the emotional part of it, and there's a lot of people that aren't. Like I've seen people, I've encouraged a lot of people to go and have the surgery, and a lot of them have regained the weight because they're just not ready. They're just not ready to, you know, it is a tool. So for the first 12 months, you're guaranteed to lose weight. There's no way out of it. You will lose weight because your body goes into such shock. You will lose the weight. But if you haven't dealt in those 12 months, if you don't start dealing with your emotional stuff, this way, this tool lets you down, or you let the tool down. It's so easy just to put the weight back on, and then people blame the surgery. It didn't work. No, you're not making it work. It's not going to save you.
Why? Because they start eating again?
Yeah, they start eating again. Like, I'm 20 plus years post-op, and I still can't eat a bread roll with bacon and eggs. And I'm looking at people and I'm thinking, oh my God. And this is not just gastro, the sleeve people. This is lap band people. This is combined, right? And I'm thinking, how do you put that down? Like, there's no way, like, but they've overridden the tool, if that makes any sense. Because remember, our mind is a powerful tool itself. Your mind can do anything. So if you're going to tell your mind you're going to eat a bacon and egg roll, you're going to eat a bacon and egg roll. But if the back of your subconscious mind, you've got, I can't eat this because it's not right for me, and whatever, I'll have half, you're only going to eat half.
So, but then if following this logic, if people don't do surgery and just work with their mind, they can lose all that 120 kilos? Or there's also a physical part of that, that when you over, when you cross certain line, you can't lose it that easily, even if you work with your mind. So what?
Look, it's not like it hasn't been done. It has. I mean, I couldn't do it. I know I tried. People have done it, but it wasn't me. I think once you get to the obese stage, you need some sort of support. And there's just that tipping point where you think, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed, and I try and I try and I try, and then in the back of your mind you've got, oh, but I've tried this and I've tried that and I've tried this and I've tried that, and I can't lose the weight. But, and that's where the overwhelm comes from, because you start to lose faith in yourself. Look, I'm not saying that if I could do it too without having the surgery, I would have done it, but I couldn't. I too was overwhelmed, but I was overwhelmed physically, I was overwhelmed emotionally, I was overwhelmed, I had three children, you know, I had my mother, my father-in-law, I was just, it was just a lot. And I would say for me, it was one of the best decisions I ever made, Yeah, there's been a lot of struggles along the way, a lot of hurdles to jump, but you know what? You make do and you learn, but these are teaching you stuff, like they're making better choices. It's the better choice, like, you know, you've got to make. And it makes you think about things as well. Like, if I do this, which path will it take me? This path or that path? You know, what will be the consequences if I have this? You know, there's just so much you learn along the way and so much you implement in your life, and not only for yourself, but for your whole family.
Yeah. So you are the best person probably to ask this question. Then my next question is, what do you think are the main causes of body image issues or us abusing our bodies? So what are the reasons why we do that?
I'm too old for the social media thing. So to me, social media is not something that I would blame. It was around a long time before social media. We've always had the models and whatever have you, and if I was to say, they were probably skinnier in my time than what they are today. Today, girls look a little bit more healthier mm-hmm. as models. To me, I would say it's women around us. Men are very fixated on, and I'm not saying all men, mm-hmm. so let's not tag all men. But there's a lot of men that are fixated on how a woman looks, what she should look like, you know, what particular size her bra should be, her butt should be. Mm-hmm. There's all that sort of definition of how a woman should be. And then, you know, and women, they're the worst. Some women are just the judgment from other women, you know. Why are women plumping up their lips? Why are we pumping up our... you know, our boobs, our lips, our eyebrows, our eyelashes. Why do we have to do that? You're beautiful as you are, but there's this sort of stigma on that we've got to look that extra, that next level, we've got to be this level of beauty, this level of weight, this level of, you know, size. It's just it's everywhere. You can't escape it. But once you're comfortable in yourself, that's when you find freedom. Like you say, I've got no bum, and Greek girls have a big bums. I've got no bum. I would love, you know, a little booty there, but in saying that, I wasn't blessed with a booty. I've got the back, the boobs, you know, so I'm the other side. Mm. To me, that's me, and I've come to accept that. Like, acceptance of self is the best gift you can give yourself.
Yeah, so when someone has this body image issues, they obviously it affects relationships, but in what way do you think? And I'm talking about all sorts of relationships, co-workers, partners, whatever. So how do you think it affects this negative body image of yourself?
Why are we allowing people to govern how we feel? Mm. Why are we giving our power away as women? Why do we close the lights when we make love to our partners? Why? To me, it's about you got to find that love for you inside. And you will find that the real man, he's not very focused on what you are focused on. Your beliefs about what's wrong with you is not what a man's focused on. A real man will love you for who you are, what you are, and all of you. Your colleague shouldn't even have any power over what you should look like. Mm. It's none of their business. You know, your child will love you no matter what, unconditionally. There really is no reason to give away your power. Yes. And let someone govern your emotions as to how you feel about your body.
So it's you who should to decide.
100%.
How you feel. If you feel healthy in the weight you are, then you stay, or the shape you are. Or if you feel like, if you feel that you're unhealthy and you want to do something about that, then it's your decision.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Women are beautiful as, you know, thin. Women are beautiful as size, let's go size from size, if they're size 4, if they're size 16, if they're size 10, if they're size 12, whatever they are, they're beautiful. We're all beautiful every which way, because everyone has different qualities, different highlights, different personalities. Yeah.
So we spoke about how you dealt with the body insecurities when you were young, but how do you deal with that now if they from time to time comes back, it comes back, or you feel like, oh, I need to lose a couple of kilos or whatever. So what's your go-to when you have this creeping well-known feeling like something wrong with me? How you deal with that?
I can honestly say, as long as I pick up my jeans and they fit, I don't
it's all good.
It's all good. The only thing that I would say that's come from the weight loss and the carrying that weight around for a very long time is maybe the spider veins. And to me, really, I'm 53, big deal. But I won't wear shorts because of them. Mm. You know, it's something that I won't do. And to me, it's about an appearance thing. Like, I like, you know, my legs to look clean, not clean, but, you know, not flawless, but, you know, you just, I don't like to see the spider veins on there. Mm. Varicose spider, whatever they are, I don't know. They're not chunky, but they are veins, right? To me, nothing a good spray tan won't fix, but, yeah, to me, that's the only thing that I question myself on. Mm. I don't...
You don't have questions anymore?
No, I don't have any more questions.
Good. So my last question is, do you have any favourite quote or saying about being a woman, or maybe your thought?
Confidence is the key that unlocks the door to your true self. And as a grounded woman, you stand tall, embracing the strength within and radiating the beauty that comes from knowing who you are.
Who said that?
Pamela Kay. That's me.
It's your.
That's me.
It's your own quote.
It's my own.
Perfect.
Yes. I wrote that last night.
This is very beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your story and being so open about that. And
thank
I hope
you.
That it may inspire someone or support someone if they're listening. And in case they want to find you, I will give your contacts in the description, and I hope you will enjoy the rest of the day and your photo shoot, and thank you again.
Thank you so much.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a KS. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.